Welcome to Restaurant Talk, the podcast that pulls back the curtain on the industry with real stories and lessons every hospitality leader needs to know. Sponsored by Save Fry Oil, Fry Low cuts fry oil costs and makes food crispier. No power, no chemicals. Now let's dive into this week's episode.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It is the Restaurant Talks podcast with me, Kieran Bailey, brought to you by the fabulous people at Save Fry Oil, who just believe in saving fry oil. It just makes sense, doesn't it, to be honest with you? Why wouldn't you want to do that? That's probably not as professional as the first time I did this, but I'm rolling with it. I'm very, very stoked to have guest number two and just to catch up, really. So, Jamie, tell the nice people who you are, where you're from, and without sounding like Cilla Black, I guess, is the answer.
Yes, hi, I'm Jamie Henderson. So I've been in the business for about 18 years in hospitality, part-time job going through college, and then I currently work for Wagamama, which I've been here for 16 years. Started as a line chef where I first met Kieran, and I've gone through the ranks, stepped up through the challenges and through the excitement, moved around the country a little bit, did a couple of years in America, opening a couple of restaurants out there, and then found myself back in London as food development chef.
I mean, can we just take a minute and just acknowledge the fact that 16 years and like 16 years ago when I first met you, like you're a baby face, fresh faced boy coming out of college. You had that wonderful little tash. Let's remember that. But you're just like, man, you make me feel old when we do this. It's been such a long time, man. 16 years with that business. Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, still can only grow the tash, not the beard. So still keeps you quite looking. You're quite young.
42 when this thing came in, to be honest with you. 42, so there is still time is the answer. Up until that point, it was just ridiculous. So it comes. Let's jump straight in then. So you came, we found you straight out of college, didn't you? You came and worked with us in Leicester, and we had a grand old time.
Yes, straight out of college, I was doing part-time job and I was going into the summer. I didn't want to work 2-3 days a week. And High Cross had that big refurb grand opening with all the restaurants moving there. So I thought, let me just hand out my CVs in a couple of restaurants. And then, funny enough, you, Ben, Tom Border interviewed me.
Tom Border, there's a lad, isn't there? You know, as head chefs go, he was an adventure, that boy, wanted to be fair.
Yeah, unfortunately, I only got to work for him for a little bit because then he had the kidney stones, didn't he? So, and then left.
He did. I mean, to be fair, you may have timed it just right. I love Tom, you know what I mean? We still chat, but he was a maniac, if we're honest with you. But that's kind of that, those moments, those kind of some wonderful things. So hang on, you were wandering around with a handful of CVs. Is that where we're at, Jamie? Like, you were out there just trying to tout yourself to anybody who'd take you. Not that you desperately wanted to come and work for us at Wagamama.
Well, do you know what? I'd love to say yes, but unfortunately, Wagamama's never been heard of in Leicester. Shocking. It was like, number 60 restaurant opened in the UK, so no one really knew about it. And I was 18 at college, not really traveling around the country as much as what I have do now. But as soon as I got that first interview and did the discovery session, as we'd call it now, a trial shift, just fell in love with all the fresh food.
Man, we were changing the game in Leicester, weren't we? I don't suppose you remember, actually, but and this is really random, but there was a business in Leicester that the guy who owned it had gone over across to Nottingham at Wagga, tried it, loved it, and replicated it. And it was literally just around the corner from High Cross. And I remember sitting down with Alistair, who was our ops manager at the time, and he was like, we're going to have to do something about that. And I was like, we're just going to destroy him. Like, we're going to come and do it properly is the answer. And which we did, to be fair. So, walking through that door for the first time, fresh out of college, ready and raring to go. Kind of, I love that mindset, Jamie, that kind of you could have just got yourself a little part-time job over the summer and just relaxed, but you didn't want to do that. Why? What is it about you in that moment that said, you know what, I want to go out there, I want to be working, I want to get a full-time job and maybe find the kind of the place that will be the home of my career?
I think a good thing is, like, college is great, you learn a lot there, but you're there in classes with 30 people. And some restaurants have 30 people in, but I was like, do you know, I actually really want to learn on the job and like different hand skills. And obviously pan Asian, I did love that kind of food anyway. So going into a restaurant and realizing you're pancoing fresh chicken every day, stuff like that, learning a lot of other tasks, as in log books, temperature controlling, kind of, obviously when I first job started, I wasn't doing rotors as such, but working out shifts, how you do that, and that family meal at the start of break, like just before you're going into service, 10 out of 10, everyone sits down, has that kind of lunch-ish breakfast, then get ready to work as a team in the kitchen. And being in an open kitchen, going in college, we're all closed behind. You're working 30, 40 around one cooker, and that's it. Whereas you've got four stations in Wagamama, you're learning each one, you're kind of helping out, doing that, all that teamwork. It's just, you say brotherhood, but that family oriented around that, working on a shift, no matter how busy it is, you know someone's there to help you and just guide you and learn you through the ropes.
There's a couple of cool things there. That kind of that open kitchen, you know, kind of that was the first time I'd worked with an open kitchen as well. As I mean, I was obviously general manager, didn't really have the skills to spend time in the kitchen, if I'm honest with you. Was more of a liability in that situation, but very much kind of for me, because as a front of house operator, to have that open kitchen to be able to kind of communicate effectively with you guys without necessarily having to talk, you know, kind of you kind of develop a bit of a shorthand and a bit of an understanding. Like if somebody's got a certain look on their face, a certain kind of, you can see the tension building somewhere. So I remember kind of what was his name? There was the guy who was on Teppan.
Tom.
Yes. Oh my days. Oh, Tom on Teppan. Jeez, now I'm having a flashback. That boy translated everything with his body language, didn't he? Like, he was like a big, he was a full transmitter, always on transmit and sharing all of that message. Oh, Jesus, Tom. I saw him, actually, weirdly, about 8 years ago. I was strolling through London, through Soho, and Tom was just sitting outside in his chef's whites, just chilling. Just minds him, which is the weirdest thing in the world, when you consider kind of we met each other in Leicester and we stopped and had a chat, and like it was lovely, man. It was like, it was odd, random to say the least, but the joy of an open kitchen is it absolutely opens up that kind of communication and opens chefs up to the impact that they have on the restaurant. Yeah, and you kind of How did it feel from your perspective like when you kind of look up and you see the joy on people's faces when they're eating the food that they put in, that you've prepared, and they put it in their mouth for the first time, and you just see that moment? Is it feeling good?
Yeah, I think it's amazing. When you see the, like, and they're all sharing it, or they're in a couple or their families, and they're sharing, like, look, you need to taste this. This is amazing. And kind of making each other jealous with they chose the wrong order. Like, this is better than what they're eating. And that's just a smile on the face. And that's what I think every chef, any person in hospitality kind of looks for. And that's what they strive to do.
Yeah, it's a beautiful feeling, isn't it? I think I think back to I was in Leicester last month, and I went and had a cup of tea in Highcross. And it's changed drastically, obviously, since I was there. You know, it's had a refurb and it looks very different. It's beautiful, I would say. Whereas we had the more sort of simplistic version of what was Wagga. The brand has evolved massively in this time.
Yeah.
But just sitting there, like, I don't know about you, Jamie, but like, do you still pop up there now and again? You still kind of get to go to there?
Yeah, I still pop up. So there's a couple of people still around, to be fair. Raf's still around.
Is he?
So, yeah. So he's seen Yusuf. So it's really good to pop in, see him, how he's doing, chat to him as well. So there's a few people I still kind of know around there. So it's good to pop in, have some food and just chat and see how their journey's going.
There's just a wonderful warmth. For me personally, when I walked into that restaurant and I just sat, like, there was just the feeling of just being able to kind of remember, like, so you talked about kind of sitting down for breakfast, kind of family meal together before we start service. I was having those moments where I was remembering sitting down with kind of each of you at different places and different points and having weird conversations. I remember sitting down with Danny and him telling me I was losing my mind about mystery dining. I need to cool my shit a little bit. I remember just sitting down with Mina, with you guys, with Tom, like, there's just something special about that moment when we sit down for dinner together and we eat together and we share that kind of experience. Is that still a thing within Wagga? Is that still something that happens?
No, yeah, 100%. I can't say it happens everywhere. I think everyone does it slightly a little bit different, but the people I know and speak to quite closely, they still recommend that 100%, because especially on the morning shift, it's a lot more easier to do where they just sit down. And then kind of you also switch off about work. It's just more like you have that half hour chatting about family, what did you get up to on your day off yesterday, or what's your plans for this evening, what band you're seeing, what football you're going to watch and stuff like that. So it builds not just all work, work, work. It's, you got that family, actually, people talk about outside life as well.
Yeah, I think it's really key, isn't it? I think it's one of the reasons. Well, I think when you look at the way any restaurant that operates well, that a team operates well, then they all have that connection with each other. And it's not just about work, and it's not just about making sure that things move smoothly and quickly. It is very much about kind of how are we connected as individuals? How are we connected as people? How are our lives connected in this way? And I think they're the ones that are truly successful is the simple answer. And that's a beautiful thing, eh?
No, yeah, 100%. And like I say, even when I was in my part-time job before joining Rangoon, it's like, I did the same thing. It's all sit down, chat, family meal, bit more of a banquet, and everyone just looks in, tries. And now that one's quite good because it was more evening work. You sit down in front of the house, it was really good for the whole team bonding session of like family meal sitting down.
Quite nice to have that reset as well before service, because I think prep can be tough. There's no getting around it. You know, I think one of the things that certainly kind of blew me away when I first joined Wagga was how everything was cooked from scratch, and everything was basically prepared in that moment, and all of the prep that was done was quite intense. So being able to just take a breath and just actually just sit down and kind of shoot the breeze together is a really powerful thing. So kind of 16 years, like 18 years in total, but 16 years with Wagga. What keeps you coming back, man? What keeps you here? What's the thing that kind of makes you say, this is the thing for me, this is the industry for me?
I think the brand's amazing. Like, it just shows with the awards at casual dinings and stuff, Midas, the stuff we keep winning, especially the food innovation, which I'm lucky to be part of the last couple of years. Again, fresh cooking, fresh ingredients that we get to play around with and make and prep to then cook. It's just amazing. And the people we work for, like I say, some of the people I work for now is I've known for years over the business, over a good 10 years, and that just keeps me, their guidance, their mentor, just helps you every way. And the challenge, you know, kid, I've moved around a bit, so Sheffield, Liverpool, Cheshire Oaks, US, London, like for me, it's just a new challenge every day. I think if it got a bit boring, then it might be sway me to be a bit like, what's next? Mm-hmm. But the fact is, every day is something different, new menu, new ideas. Yeah, it just keeps it fresh every day. And then, especially in the food development team, playing with food, coming up with new ideas. And plus, you get to meet some people that I've not met because I was heavily north-based. Whereas now we meet people in kind of the London region, the South region, and they know you. You kind of pay their name through, like, whatever they've come through, their journey, Wagamama. So it's good just to catch up how stories relate, but completely different parts of the country as well.
Yeah, it's a great thing, man. And that kind of that food innovation team that you're a part of, it's you've been on some adventures with that particular thing. I mean, I've watched through social media kind of some of the journeys you've been on with Steve Mangleshot, and I just think, first of all, I know there was a lot of fun involved in there because he's a funny dude. There's no getting around it at all. What a cracking fella. But you've been on some real kind of long distance journeys there to kind of understand food. So tell us a bit about the last one that you went on.
Yeah, so luckily enough, I went twice. So Steve Mangleshot, yeah, great guy. Love working with him. The Surrender as well. And then Cole, he's another development chef. So the first trip, me, Surrender and Cole just went out there and just a bit of a reality check of, are we doing kind of, are we staying loyal to the Pan-Asian cuisine, or are we changing it too much for kind of the palate in the UK? And that was a really good thing to go out there and go, we are on the right light. Like what we saw and what we're doing is what we saw out there. Don't get me wrong, there's just a few more quirky things out there which maybe we wouldn't bring over here. But yeah, definitely on the right tracks. And then I was lucky enough to be part of helping the new cookbook. So kind of went out there, and the whole cookbook is about meeting people and their journeys. So that was fun. Great to meet actual people out there and sit down with the chefs and the restaurant owners and kind of through a translator talk about how their journey and what they're doing and how we can relate that to a cookbook that people can buy and then take that home. And actually, it's not just a chef's cookbook. Anyone from scratch can use that cookbook to make the dishes and sauces in there.
That's a wonderful thing, because I think a lot of people now are really kind of feeling quite brave when it comes to kind of trying to cook new stuff that they've never considered doing in the past. So having that book and having that kind of those lessons available to them that are simplified nice and kind of clearly gives us all the opportunity to kind of to play. I love that idea of kind of going around and sort of sitting down talking to operators and owner operators. What was kind of, was there anything kind of from those conversations that really kind of stuck with you, that kind of about the challenges maybe that they face kind of operating and delivering on there? Is there any kind of stories that kind of that sit?
What I just saw is like you think kind of sometimes the chefs in the UK work hard. They work hard. Like we were meeting them at 5:30 a.m. sometimes, because that's when they were starting prep. and just and how it's more a lot more family there. Mom and dad run it, the sons and daughters own like the line, iron up the grandkids to then work in there, and it is a really true family and how they work hard to, and how more like simplicity on their dishes makes them. They don't want all the 100% garnishes on top or anything. They want whatever flavors in there, as long as it's great flavor. They don't remember it's 2-3 flavors or 10.
Yeah.
But keep it simplistic, and they love that.
That's very cool, man. And I love that idea that kind of it's family businesses. And kind of one of the things I'm looking forward to with this particular podcast is I'm going to be doing a cross-section of talking to people from amazing brands like yours and a place that kind of I called home, Wagamama, for a really long time, and I still have huge love for, but also a lot of those kind of sort of smaller mom-and-pop operators who are out there kind of innovating and kind of bringing really interesting things to the party. So you said that there's kind of there's some things that you kind of found over there that wouldn't necessarily be suited to the Western palate. One of the things that really is kind of that has been sitting and kind of bubbling under, I think, for the last few years that people keep telling me is going to pop off is insects. Insects within food and how it's going to really kind of start to kind of take on board. But I'm just not sure that the UK market is really ready on the whole to embrace insects. What do you reckon? That's a mad question. You didn't see that coming, did you, Jamie?
No, yeah, I didn't see that coming, but funny enough, I've tried insects. I can't see them hitting the UK market that well. And there's a big thing as well, sustainability around it and all of that bigger piece that obviously every restaurant or any brand in the UK is cast on, and CO2 and all of that, all them kind of sustainability. Just can't see insects hitting it and doing it well.
I don't disagree. I think I've listened to, I reckon, maybe a dozen different people tell me over the years that insects are going to be the next big thing, and I'm just, every time I look at them, I just think, I'm not sure, you know. I'm not sure. I like the idea. I like the idea of kind of as a vegetarian, I believe that kind of animals should be left to do their own thing, but that's just me. But I also think if you are going to eat animals, then why are we picking on one another? But this is not a vegetarian like pro podcast, Jamie. So I'm going to dial that back. I'm going to dial it back. Excuse me. Amazing. So from an innovation perspective, kind of where are you finding kind of creativity from? Because after 16 years within a brand, it would be kind of easy to become focused and have that kind of tunnel vision. How are you ensuring that kind of you're still kind of coming up with the innovation? Because some of the stuff that's kind of coming onto the menu, there's this it's like a mushroom thing, kind of deep fried, like almost like the kind of the take on the chili squid. It was just incredible.
So there's a vegan squid which we used king oyster mushrooms, and then we did another one which was a chili crispy mushrooms.
So
it's all of that. It's more like, how do we go? So what we saw in the trend for, especially like vegan or vegetarian, is there's heavy going down the whole protein base, like fake proteins and stuff. But there's so much how that's manufactured that goes into that, what people don't realize.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've realized, the trend is now coming back to kind of whole vegetables.
Yeah.
So that's how can we take a fruit or vegetable and make it just taste slightly different or what people wouldn't expect. So obviously we had a big hit with the watermelon tuna.
Yes.
A couple of years ago. So it's all just coming out new ways of, if you dehydrate a watermelon to then reheat it, how does that change the texture, make it a bit more soft and stuff like that. So it's just, again, really just playing around with it. We're getting in the kitchen 3-4 days a week of just, what can we play around? What can change? What are suppliers coming up with as well? Suppliers will always call us as well and say, hey, I've got this product. Do you want to have a look at it? And we'll obviously never say no. So have a look at it and just see how it fits with our menu.
Every day, Fryer Oil drains your profits. Dump, buy, repeat. Frylo ends the cycle. This small device sits in your fryer, doubles oil life, and cuts costs by up to 50%. The result? Crispier, lighter, less greasy food. No risk, nothing up front, no ongoing maintenance costs. Visit Save Fry Oil and stop deep frying your profits.
I love that. I think, that for me is really important, that idea of spending 3 or 4 days a week in the kitchen, kind of playing with different ingredients and seeing what can be done, and then just trialing out. Trial and error, I guess, is a wonderful thing. But that relationship with suppliers, I think, is really key as well, isn't it? You know, kind of one of my overarching memories of Wagga is kind of they always had a great relationship with the suppliers, and they always kind of worked with them really closely and supported them and supported each other, I think, really was probably the most important thing. And that obviously is a thing that kind of that continues to flourish and grow.
No, yeah, 100%. I can't agree anymore. Like, the key relationship with the suppliers is that if there's no supply, you don't get food, so and you can't sell it. So it works both ways of helping each other out whenever it's needed.
Top draw. So kitchen life, man. Kitchen life. Like, I always kind of start by telling the story. I spent 2 years, like you, training to be a chef at college. But I very much realised that I had the mouth of Gordon Ramsay, but the talent of a brick. It wasn't impressive, to be fair. So I stepped away from that. So it's kitchen life for you. Kind of, what is it that you love about kitchen life, Jamie? What is it? What's the thing that really kind of makes you smile still to this day?
I just think that working with people, I think, and it always, like, especially now I'm a bit older, I'm getting, like, the people from, like, college are coming through, and it's just showing them new skills and, like, seeing that face of, oh, wow, you took the time just to show me something. It's like, hey, it's part of the job. Everyone needs to start somewhere. Someone always needs someone to show them how to get better, and we use the word Kaizen. Kaizen gets better slowly every day. So that's what it was. Like I say, I grew mentors, and that's how I just kind of passed that knowledge down on how is that next person or that chef going to get any better if no one takes the time just to go through it and train them, go, actually, even though walking across the past, oh, you're just slicing that a little bit wrong. This is how you should do it. Mm-hmm. And I go, oh, thanks, I've never seen that. Or, and we do a lot with, like, training videos and stuff like that. But just that team bonding where you go is, like, say, everyone will always know whether you've got, we don't use tickets, we use full screens, like you know, Kieran. So it's, if you've got a full screen, everyone looks at each other, just smiles. No one goes, like, especially over kitchen, no one swears or anything. Just smiles at each other, nods. Yeah. Okay, everyone's speaking exactly the same thing, telepathic. Everyone knows it's going to be a busy day, but everyone's in it together. People staying late, whatever it is, it's just everyone knows, like, hospitality, I think you definitely need a thick skin to work in it.
Without doubt.
To get through some shifts that you've had. Obviously, someone falling in sick or something, but everyone knows they're in a certain boat together and will help each other to get through. And it's just that you never get that anywhere else, really, I don't think. Even on a football pitch, everyone plays, strikers not coming and help necessarily coming to defend, but...
Not as a rule.
No, wherever you are, yeah. Whereas in the on the kitchen in the past, you know, if I can see you're struggling, I'm coming to help.
That KDS system, man, that the introduction of that was an absolute game changer for any kitchen, I think, to be fair, but certainly in a Wagga kitchen. The idea, kind of, certainly as a front of house manager, being able to look down the cook line and sort of see where each station was at, and you start to see the kind of the different colours up on the screen. And once we start to see a bit too much pink on there, then there's a bit of like, oh, okay, maybe we need to kind of start moving forward. But then kind of, I love the idea that then somebody will jump and help, kind of maybe their section is kind of under control. It's a beautiful thing, man. It really is. And you're right. Kind of, you don't get that in many places. And I don't know, maybe I'm biased because this has been my life and has been your life too. But I think we're quite unique in that fact. So when we think about kind of kitchen innovations, the KDS was absolutely one. There's no getting around it, and it was an amazing one. Are there any other kind of kitchen equipment innovations that have sort of blown you away or made life easier and just kind of and have just changed the way you operate?
I think there's a couple of new fryers over the last couple of years that do kind of self-filtering after 12 cooks. So that's really helpful on oil. Obviously, oil is kind of one of the biggest costs in a kitchen. So that's one thing. Took some time to get used to because it has a default way it won't let you cook anymore, so it has settings you can program it to, I don't know, chicken takes 2 minutes or whatever, for example. But if you, so you click that, it beeps, and then you know the basket needs to come up, but it won't let you click that after 12 cooks, so it kind of stop cooking.
Yeah.
So then you have to wait a couple of minutes for a self-filter. So it took a couple of chefs, like, to took me a while to get used to it, because it's just like, I've got 10 full screen, I just need to get my chicken cooked.
Yeah.
After you realise and you start doing P&Ls and everything, look at a bigger picture, like, actually, it really does help, like, say, the longevity of the oil.
Which is a huge thing. I mean, you touched on sustainability earlier, and I think sustainability is something that kind of every brand is thinking about now, and every business should be thinking about, whether you're a mom and pop or a brand of a... What's Wagga got now? 110, 120?
No, it's 160 or 165.
Oh, maybe. My God. So many. So whether or not you're 160, whether or not you've one site, sustainability has to be at your forethought. So how do you adjust to that then? So that moment where you're thinking, right, okay, I've got a kitchen full of, a screen full of chicken. I need this chicken done, but my fryer is not allowing to do that. How do you adjust to that? How do you kind of get used to it? Is it about just in systems and process and thinking, right, how do I plan for this to be a part of what we do now in our time? Is that it?
Yeah, exactly that. And then just a bit of training and understanding. So the chefs is like, that customer will wait that extra 1 or 2 minutes it takes to clean a fryer, but then you'll be sound after that. And also, it just makes the chicken so much better as well, just because the oil's cleaner. So it's just getting rid of any breadcrumbs, corn flour, whatever it may be at the bottom of that oil, filtering it out, that gets bottom in the tank at the bottom. And then the same oil's coming back up, it's just cleaner. It hasn't got all them bits sitting there getting burnt at the bottom of the fryer,
which will undoubtedly taint the flavour. And then I guess it's about kind of making sure the front of house and back of house are communicating effectively, because if back of house are kind of are in the situation of like waiting, front of house can be managing that situation, they're managing the guest expectation up front. And if they're waiting an extra couple of minutes, because one of the things that you guys are famous for is pace. You know, people come to Wagga and they expect, first of all, they know. So for anybody who hasn't eaten at Wagamama, explain how it works, because some people are idiots and they haven't tried it. And there's going to be a lot of Americans on listening to this podcast who haven't had the pleasure, because so far Wagga is in New York. Where have you got to in America?
New York, Boston, Texas, Atlanta.
New York, Boston, Texas. I mean, there's some distance between those. That's not an easy ride by any stretch, but that's not a lot is the answer. So how does Wagga work? What's the process of the kind of the service experience?
Yeah, so we have sides and not starters. So basically all the food is cooked fresh to order, no microwaves in the kits or anything like that. So it kind of is done by a ticket system on each station. So whatever dish comes from what station, it just comes only on that screen. So you work down the screen, send it when it's ready, and it gets sent. So there's a big thing on. And even now, I still hear customers when we're walking through restaurants going, oh, well, I've got my main, but that's star. It's like, it's not star, it's a side. Just explain, it all comes out fresh. So it's not sitting under a heat lamp, and then the sauce is getting that skin on top because it's been sitting there for 5-10 minutes waiting for the main course. So it all comes out fresh when it's ready. So yeah, someone might get the side, main course, and another side will come out, then the final main course will come out. But it's just all done on that. So we aim to get all our dishes out within 15 minutes.
That's not bad going, is it? That is not bad going at all. But again, that kind of that education piece is still incredibly key. The idea that still you've got guests kind of going, but I've got my main course, but I don't have my starter. And just... that's a conversation that we've been having for a really long time, to be fair. So it takes time and energy to just keep reminding people, because there's always somebody new coming through the door. So we don't get to make that assumption.
I think that's a key thing. It just shows that still new people are coming in to try Wagamama food, because from recommendations from friends, family, whoever it may be. So I think that's a really good thing for us as well.
I think it's a beautiful thing, to be fair. And I was in New York... back end of May, I went over to Nashville for a few days for the Unreasonable Hospitality Summit, and then treated myself to a couple of days just wandering around New York, minding my own business. And I stayed at Nomad, which was about 10 minutes away from where the Wagga was that you guys had opened. And I just sat outside just watching and just thinking about kind of all of you guys and kind of the impact that you'd had on that business and on the people within that team. And honestly, Jamie, I just felt incredibly proud of you. And it's not something I tell you very often, dude, because we don't get to talk too much, but I'm so proud of kind of where you've got to and where you're kind of moving to, and the constant kind of evolution. And I think the thing that will always stick with me about you is your work ethic, man. It was always incredible. It really was. And like you said, kind of going out and finding those challenges. And I think you were chasing challenges, and you just went wherever they were. And that's a beautiful thing, dude. It really is. And the impact that you made on that restaurant in a city that is thousands of miles away, it's got to feel good, dude. It's got to feel good.
No, yeah, 100%. Unfortunately, I haven't been back actually since I left. So it's on my list to get back to New York and Boston, because I only spent a year in New York opening that one, 210 Fifth. I spent a lot more time, nearly 3.5 years in Boston. So I do need to get back over there and see some more friends again.
Got to tell you as well, New York's relatively quiet at the moment. It's actually quite a nice stroll to be wandering around. That's politics for you, making the city much easier to get around, to be fair. But it's a beautiful sight, an absolutely beautiful sight. So when you're thinking about kind of... you talked about Raf as well, man. Raf's still in Highcross. I can't believe. So Raf was again started probably around the same time as you, didn't he? As a line cook, I guess maybe a bit before.
A bit after, about 6 months, I think it was after.
What a dude! What an absolute! I love the fact he's still there. Now I'm going to have to go back to Highcross and seek him out and say hello, because again, like, just Like, genuinely, like, within our business, it's people. It's all about people, and it's all about the connections that you've made. And you've talked about it through kind of sitting down and kind of having that pre-service dinner, and you've talked about kind of giving that support and giving that kind of feedback as you move along. You know, like, that idea that kind of you can just be wandering on a cook line and see somebody not kind of preparing something quite right, and you just give them some feedback in that moment. That all of that does is build relationship and build connection to the person, to the business. And I think just... the idea that some folks who are still there after this length of time, it blows me away, dude. It does. And I love that kind of, because I think, so when we talk about feedback, you know, I talk to a lot of people about feedback within restaurants, and they always kind of think that it's got to be in the perfect moments. They have to kind of maybe have a meeting room or have a specific time where they're going to sit down and give somebody feedback about the performance. From your perspective, it's very much kind of in the moment, see somebody in an action and correct that action as you're moving along. Is that a thing that you do consistently? Is that a thing that you've always done? Is that something that just kind of has delivered great results for you?
Yeah, I think it's more when I used to be head chef or area chef, regional chef, you can do that a bit more often because kind of you're working with them daily, weekly, you're known a lot more. Whereas here it becomes less, but the close teams we work with still now, where we visit, if there's an event or anything that we take part in, like, it's a lot more then. But yeah, back in the day, you used to always do it a lot because I always got told, I don't know if it was you, it might have been Ben Smith, I've always said, if you walk past something that's wrong, you're basically saying, yeah, that's fine then, just keep doing it. And that's why I got taught, don't get it wrong, if you got full screen, it might be like, you know, give me 10 minutes and I'll catch up with you in a minute.
Yeah.
If you've got the time, then you might as well just say, look, and that person will take it and be grateful and just learn from a mistake or just not be shown correctly the first time, and just then we'll start doing it correctly moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, it is about standards, and it's kind of what you're describing there is tacit agreement. That kind of, if you wonder by it and let it slide, then we're accepting that is our standard and that's how we operate. But actually, that's not. You know, kind of we've always been about doing the right things the right way, and you're right. And then it's about sharing it in the right way. If someone's got a screen full of tickets, then taking a moment with them in that particular point and just trying to give them some direction is probably not going to make you too many friends, is it? To be fair,
yeah.
So we'll be cool. Be cool and give them some space. That is a simple answer. Perfect. So kind of, let's talk about music, Jamie. You know, and again, the people at Safe Fryer are going, why is Kieran talking about music? It's not what we agreed, but I'm afraid thinking radical, so we're just going to roll with it. Is there a particular song? So kind of pre-opening and kind of as you're doing prep, the radio's always on, the music's always on. Is there a particular song that just can just take you and raise you up and just, no matter how hard the day is, no matter how hard the challenge is, it'll absolutely take you to the next level and just keep you pushing forward?
You might not be happy with this, but there's not really one song. I think for me, it changed every year. Kind of, it has to have a good beat to it.
Okay.
And something that you can sing along to it. Like, I always say to some chefs, like, come on, turn this off because this is actually making my day worse because it's so slow. But I need something that's going to kind of coffee, kick me up the arse a little bit and make me move that little bit faster to the song. Can't do a slow moving song that's just going to make me like fall asleep. So it changes. So one I would say that's recent is Messy in Heaven.
Okay, nice.
So just that one that just, it's got a good beat to it. You kind of sing along to it. Yeah, keeps moving to it. But again, it will just change kind of what's popping in that kind of 6 months, a year, whatever's hitting it.
Yeah, for sure. I think I was chatting with one of the chefs from the Hard Rock, and he said one of his chefs kept trying to put Portishead on the music, and he was just like, I love Portishead, but they're not getting it done when it comes to just knocking out great food, great service at an absolute pace. It's just not doing it, to be fair. It is just not doing it. Yeah, cool. Mate, I'm so proud of you, genuinely. I honestly, I reckon I booked this just so I could catch up with you and just tell you how incredibly proud I am for what you've become, where you've got to. What comes next, man? Where are you going to go? What's the next opportunity? Have you got a plan?
I don't know, to be honest.
You got a master plan?
No master plan in here. It's just, look, I'm enjoying what I'm doing right now. So it's one of those. Don't want to be jumping ship and thinking grass is green on the other side and it just don't quite work out. So I'm enjoying it. Love the guys, the team I'm working with right now. And just looking forward to what's going on in the future here before I even look at what's going up next.
Fair. Absolutely fair. Mate, thank you so much. And as I say, I'm incredibly proud of you. You've achieved incredible things, and you've made a massive difference on a lot of people's lives. I just know that. So to have done that is top draw, dude. That's all we can sign up to do, I guess, isn't it, to be honest with you?
No, yeah, exactly. I'll obviously say thank you to you, and there's a lot of other people to say thanks to. Like, you can't do it, like, say, learn a lot from everyone I've worked with in the past, and that's all I can do is kind of share that down as well. And it's great seeing people I've worked with moving up and them doing the same thing as well.
It's a beautiful thing. We just pay it forward, which is the power of hospitality, to be fair. It's all about paying it forward. That simple, really. Buddy, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. We're going to play out now to your favourite track when I do the edit, so it'll be nice. We'll have a good time. Probably get Safe Fryer Oil sued by the PRS, but that's not mine. Mate, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Happy Monday.
Cheers. Thank you. Have a great week.
Thanks for tuning in to Restaurant Talk. If you enjoyed the episode, please follow, subscribe, and share. Thanks to our sponsor, Safe Fry Oil. See you next time.